Welcome to the Simmons Sporting Goods All Things Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Browning Firearms, the best there is, Realtree Outdoors, Swarovski Optic, Browning Ammo, and Banded Waders. Here's your hosts, Caleb Wallace, Cole Barthel, and Kyle Bearfield.
The other rep has a lease in Sonora. It's 10,000 acres with a camp for $2,200, but you only get four turkeys.
That's good.
Well, that's how many. That's a state law.
No, your family. Like, say I take Asa down there, too.
Dang,
we get two turkeys per year.
That's a good rule. That's why you ain't in our club, Devin.
Hey, welcome back to the Simmons Podcast, All Things Hunting. This is your host,
apparently
Kyle
Dylan
Bearfield,
wants to take us off
with a bronc.
Somebody go get one of them Garmin shock collars.
What is that?
It's a box. It's like a big box that goes in the bed of your truck that you put your clothes and stuff in.
They high?
Oh.
What is it?
But they're like $1,400.
Well, it's kind of like one of them
pull out.
It's like a giant pelican case.
Truck thing, what they call it? Like,
Yeah. It's not that. It's just a box. Like, it's on wheels. You roll it around. A big old coffin, put a dead body in it.
Man.
But
how many turkeys can you put in it?
You feel
you got a lock on it?
Yeah. I lost the key.
I lost the key, sir.
Yeah. But you can put a gun in it, too. Welcome back, y'all, to the Simmons Sporting Goods All Things Hunting Podcast. This is a continuation of what you heard last week, except we added a turkey killer, duck killer, deer killer, fish killer, Taylor. He's joined us now. He's taking Caleb's spot. Caleb may show up before we're done, but he's had to do his other job, so he's busy. But Taylor, you missed the one we talked about last week. We got into talking about duck hunting and Devin and Rusty and kind of their past to get to where they are today. And we talked about how good the duck season was, how bad the duck season was, but we'll let you catch yourself up from what you do and introduce yourself to the people that didn't listen to the podcast you were on last time and give us your duck report for the year.
All right. Like I said, my name's Taylor Gilley. I'm the head guide for an outfitter in Northeast Louisiana called Dave's Bayou Lodge and Outfitter. Our season, a little down from last year, looking at the numbers, but not too far off, you know. Not very many big ducks. We'd get on a hot streak. We'd kill them pretty good. It'd slow down, you know. It's kind of back and forth. But overall, you know, I think we held our own and, you know, ended up with a pretty decent year, you know. Throwing the speckle belly. We shot more speckle bellies this year than we did last year. So that's – yeah, no, we shot them before. Yeah, kind of chased them around. But during duck season too, I mean, it wasn't.
Especially came out with at least one every day.
Yeah, I mean, and the blind I was hunting, it just, the specs were eating it up. You know, first 10 days of that first split, we was killing, you know, averaging probably 8 to 12 a day. So that's pretty good. You know, for the people that's coming, you know, to hunt with us, they come from all over. You know, a lot of the guys up in the northern, northeast part of the world, you know, they don't really get a lot of specs, you know, and so that's always a bonus, you know, especially when the duck hunting can slow down. It always helps. Yep.
That's right. You know, I saw a weird thing on social media this year that when somebody was killing ducks, a couple days later, or maybe even one day later, Devin Singleton would be in the picture with them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you know,
day.
Absolutely.
I'm telling you.
I don't know the nicest way to put it, but yeah, Devin, he just show up, man. It's like having a crawfish boil or something. Devin, he just show up, you know.
That's a fact.
Depend on which way the wind's blowing.
I'm jealous of it.
If I come in there, honey, I'm home.
No rhyme or reason. He just, you know, hey, he show up. Hey, he helped us out, you know, and he did a good job. Everybody liked him, you know, and we had a lot of fun this year.
Tell everybody how you kind of got started with Dave's Bayou.
That's a pretty long story, but I first started guiding when I was 15 years old. I was hunting on some family friends' property, Trey Banks' property, which is borders us to the south. They own the whole southern tip of Richland Parish, where the Beth River and Big Creek kind of joined at right there. And I started guiding for them all throughout high school, every weekend, skipping school on Friday, skipping school on Monday during Christmas break, stuff like that. And guided for them about four seasons probably. And then I was seeing a girl, and my guy that I guided with now, Brandon, he was dating her mom. And
man, you don't want to get into these kind of stories.
You're going to say the same girl? Yeah. Her mom.
And actually he was guiding in Arkansas, and then I was guiding for Mr. Trey, and then me and that girl broke up or whatever, but me and Brandon still kind of talked or whatever. And he had an uncle that was leasing a blind at Days By, and they were wanting to start getting to the guided deal. And so his uncle said, "Hey, I know a guy," talking about Brandon, "you know, that's got some guiding experience, been doing it a while, and can help y'all get this thing going." And then me and Brandon's paths crossed back during teal season, the year before they really wanted to start guiding duck hunts, which was 2015. And Brandon was like, and I was working in the oil field at the time and just guiding duck hunts when I was home, and I ended up having a knee injury and I was going to be off all duck season. And Brandon was like, you know, "Hey, do you want to come help us get this thing started or whatever?" So me and Brandon kind of teamed up and got it going, and we've been hunting every day together for, I guess, seven seasons now. So,
but then it's not just killing ducks. There's lots of work and decoys and cleaning.
Everybody says, "Man, you got the dream job." You know, I'm sure, Rusty, I'm sure you hear that all the time, but we put in a whole lot more days outside of those 60 days, you know. So it's
– hey, and that's what people don't know is you go 60 days, and whether you know it's a good weather day, a bad weather day, it doesn't matter. When a lot of people wake up and they look at the weather and go, "Man, I ain't going."
Yeah.
You got to go.
It's not an option sleeping in.
Mm-mm. No.
That's tough. That's mental warfare right there.
And there's days you know it's fixing to suck.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, you know.
No wind, low clouds, somewhat of fog, you know, just hot, 70 degrees.
But now on that same day, I have thought, "Man, it's fixing to and burn them." And I've had, just go and can't kill them on the couch. I mean, we don't just say that just because. I mean, it's like you must be present to win.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Like I say, you try not to go in things with too high of expectations. That way you don't get let down, you know. I mean, of course, a good hunt to us and a good hunt to somebody that's coming to hunt, you know, from out of state that don't get to do it and experience and see it every day is two totally different things, you know. So it don't take but one, you know, one good wad of teal to get in there and knock down 10 or 15 out of it, or some speckle bellies get in there, and it can only be a pair. But, you know, the way the specks work, and they get in there and just get right in front of you, you know.
That's a great point. People put way too much emphasis on the number. And we kill our fair share, all of us do, but that ain't the reason we do it.
A lot of guys that don't get to go. The place you're at is a premier place. Dave's Bayou is I've been all over, and it's probably the nicest under one roof facility I've ever been at. And so the whole experience there, and this is I love the streets, and it's not a pitch for them, it's just honest. It is a phenomenal place, and the experience you get to have there, whether the hunting's good, the meals, the service at the lodge, everything else. The hunting, you know, is great, but it's worth coming for everything else.
That's right. You know, and that's kind of what we try to do. And that was kind of, you know, the streets that own the place, that was kind of, I guess, their whole mindset behind the things is, "Hey, we're going to do everything we can to make it the most enjoyable, you know, time you can have outside duck hunting. Killing ducks will be a bonus." You know, everything from the accommodations to the five-star chef we have from New Orleans, the skeet shooting, you know, the big game exotics, the whole nine yards. I mean, we got the nicest vehicles money can buy to get you to the blind end, you know, and it's just, so that's, you know, and when the hunting is slow, I mean, a lot of those guys come down there and they understand, you know, hey, they see us trying, they see we got, you know, a nice lodge, nice accommodations, nice transportation, you know, good dogs, good guides, good clean blinds, well set decoys, and they see we're doing everything we can do to put them on birds, and, you know, we're duck guys. We're not God. We can only do so much. You know,
The things you can control, you do the best
right.
at.
You control the controllable. So,
I would say they have the best means of getting to the blind.
It's the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah. I talked to him.
He's a good guy, man.
So we run those Hydra Treks. Yeah, we got Shoot Mr. Jimmy. They just bought another one. We got five of them now.
Literally and, duck hunting tennis shoes if you wanted to. I think I had a guy show up Hey Dudes one day this year.
Hey, I saw a guy hunting in Chacos one time, man. Blew my mind. He was from South. He's from Miami, Florida. He showed up in some Chacos and like some neoprene socks. It was, and a lot of those guys, you know, we'll tell them, you know, hey, you know, only knee boots are needed, and they'll come and they'll hunt their knee boots the first day, and the second day, you know, they'll show up in just whatever boots they flew in on the plane in, yeah, or drove, yeah, in, you know, because it's
you don't get, especially a dry year like this, yeah, you didn't get in mode. I had one guy show up in my old Cajun Nikes. That was the best to me. That was hilarious.
He also had a guy show up in On Clouds at the Shinley.
That's a fact.
And it just rained.
Huh?
Oh, yeah. And it just rained.
That money
and
break.
It just rained. Yeah, asked if he needed waders. I said, yeah, you need a wetsuit if you, yeah, got it.
Tell me about, I remember somebody sent me a picture of what Devin put on there. What's the truth behind the teal volley this year?
What was it, 36?
I wasn't there.
I was
the scout.
I did not want to believe it.
Man, it was.
I just
want
to know.
I'd have never called the shot. I'm going to give props to Taylor on this. Is like we talked about in the last episode, we have soybeans in front of us. They're so about,
they weren't
80,
working all day. Tell us
they were 80 yards. We couldn't buy a duck to work. It's like I say, and can't shoot them with a 30-06. And I mean, we would just have, it was thousands, literally thousands. They'd come over the blind. Well, we probably could have shot them first pass.
We were facing north.
Had a hard north
and
wind.
And a hard north wind, so all the birds were coming behind us. And like I say, we were hunting in a road levee blind, and it was probably, I don't know.
It's 80 yards, 80, to the
80
beans.
Yards to the edge of the beans, and then if they had cut them right there in front of the blind, and those out there were too wet to get to. And so the birds were coming. They would fly from the right, and they'd get out there to the decoys, and they would kind of peel out and try to light into the wind out there at 80 yards.
And we had our decoys set up about 40, trying to pinch the ducks between the decoys and us, right? We could.
Pull the decoys in. Maybe they'd hit the decoys and go out, and we pushed them out, trying
they
to pinch
knew.
Them. And they just – and it was weird. It was matter of fact, Josh said that – he said, man, that field's loaded up. He said, y'all need to go hunt it.
And, I stopped there on the way back from hunting with Rusty.
Yeah.
I had to come here for something for work, and then I was leaving out of town on that Friday, so I couldn't hunt. So Rusty's day I hunted with him was my last day of the year. So I stopped just to check, and there hadn't been any birds in there, and I had a feeling. My truck was clean. I was like, there's birds in there. I just got a feeling.
Because y'all hunted it like on like a Wednesday.
Yeah, on Tuesday. I hunted on Tuesday and killed a couple.
Yeah.
Not many. I was going to go because it was going to be my very last hunt. I was going to go that day, but I wasn't going to take a blind full of people.
And you looked on like Wednesday or Thursday?
No,
like I looked on
what day to hunt? Yeah, I hunted with him on Thursday. So I looked on Thursday midday. And when I pulled in, I called him and I said, you better hunt.
Yeah, I said, I'm hunting tomorrow. I said, tomorrow is going to be my last hunt. I said, I'm done after tomorrow.
It was the last week of the season.
Yeah.
So
they'd been doing that all morning. I mean, we'd already seen 10,000 teals set 200 yards from us once, and we never fired a shot. And they were about to do it again. I mean, they would just swing.
Well, I mean, it was weird, though, because we're sitting there, you know, we'd killed a couple gadwall, I think a mallard and maybe a spoonbill and maybe a pair of teal in the first hour of the hunt. And we're just kind of sitting there, you know, and we hear something coming from behind us, and we peek up and seen a drove of probably 250 teal coming. They come right over Devin's end of the dog box, and, you know, you get down, you're like, golly, and you look up where they're going, you know, after they get
past you.
You're
just expecting them one pass and right back down like teal do, right?
And you kind of peek up to see where they went, and you see them out there. The next thing you know, here comes another drove, and it was probably, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 droves, anywhere 200, 300 teal come, and they all come, and they started doing the teal thing, but just wouldn't ever set up right. Nobody wanted to call the shot, and they ended up going and lighting out there probably 400 yards on the east side of the field, and then they stay there, I don't know, 20-30 minutes, and they jumped up and left.
They headed northeast.
And probably
an hour later.
It had to be the same deal. They come in the same deal from the south, come over Devin's end of the dog box, and I said, you know.
They'd already circled us about two or three times, and I mean – so we got a couple kids in the blind. Did we have kids in the blind that day? I don't remember.
Yeah. So yeah, Miller and Hopkins.
Yeah. So yeah, you want ducks to set up right, right? That's why we all hunt. We want them to set up right. Just wasn't gonna happen. So Taylor finally calls a shot. So they're coming from the northeast. They're kind of headed southwest. They're on my end, and should have been my shot call. But I want everybody to shoot. So I hadn't been calling them. They get down there and they turn and everything stacks up in a line.
They bank out and it just.
And I'm telling you, it was a wall of teal. And Taylor said, let's go. And I've never seen anything like it. It was teal. We got out of the blind with stringers. I've never done that in my life. I mean, we got out there, had two dogs. We had dogs just steady picking up birds and everything else.
I didn't think we'd kill.
It was, I figured we had 18, maybe.
18, 20.
But so many had fell.
And they got in those beans, and you couldn't tell, you couldn't see them. And me and Cubby were walking out through the beans, and he had done got out there. He's a little better shape than I am, a little lighter. He cruised on across that sloppy field. He got out there, and he had shoot a crip, and it'd be three or four more just kind of jump up like quail, and they couldn't really fly with broke wings.
I shot another 10 times at crip.
More than that.
He had a whole little shell belt, and he
put a box of shells in my water. When I stood up, I dumped a box of shells in my water. My puppy picked up 16 ducks, and then they were out there. I don't know how many. I mean, it was to the point. I mean, Lord was looking after us. It was to the, you never mean for something like that to happen, but we were three shy of a limit after we got done picking
them all up. Yeah.
And I mean, we scoured the field for a long time trying to pick up a full limit in one volley. But
I think it ended up being, 34, 36,
34, like 36 or something like
that. Beckham was texting
I was
back and
talking
forward.
To one of them in the blind. Of course, they were jacking with me. I was at a show working and I said, what do y'all got?
It was eight.
And it would be one. Then it'd be one of them tell me 10. Then one tell me 7.
He ain't talk. See, I wasn't going to lie to him.
Well, then one,
me.
One told me they had 7 and he said, we just rained out
34 or whatever.
It was 20-something out of a volley. Well, then, 15 minutes later, I'm on the phone with him right before y'all shot these birds.
Yeah.
They only had 7. Well, then they shoot 34.
Oh, so he was joking when he said we rained out 20-something.
Yeah. I called him, huffing and puffing. I'm like, man, I don't know how many we got. It's a bunch.
Yeah. It was a.
That's one of the more impressive volleys
I've. Hey, I'm telling you, when I say. The closest duck was probably 55, 60 yards. That's the God's honest truth of it. And it was a couple of us shooting 28. I was shooting a 20 gauge. Was anybody else shooting
20? I wasn't shooting a 20.
I know you wasn't shooting 20 gauge. No, but I guess I was the only one shooting 20 gauge.
Taylor said he ain't shooting no sub.
But man, I shooting 10 if the shells wasn't so high.
But, man, it was like shooting in geese, just stuff just keeps falling. Well, we were done shooting and teal were still picking up and stuff.
That's the day you needed a camera on that.
Yeah, you'd have had to have a camera to.
And see,
to
we were video when those teal, it would, they all kind of got in the field and split up. It was 500, 700, in each little wad kind of flying around. We were videoing some of them, but we all too greedy, when it's time to kill, we didn't put the phones down.
Yeah, so. I'm the only one that keep holding the phone.
Yeah, you're that guy. We appreciate you. We appreciate guys like you. Everybody.
Not that guy. And it was cool, man. It was something to see. It had to be there to.
Good way to cap off season.
Oh yeah. Like I said, that was the third of the last. That was a Friday before season went out.
I went Sunday, took some guys Sunday, and we never shot our guns.
Now I thought y'all went Monday.
Might have. Yeah, that's right. Season closed on Monday.
To the same spot.
Exact same spot. When we got there, teal jumping up, flying everywhere. I said, man, we about to get them. Never shot our gun.
They had roosted in there that night, from what they told me.
It's amazing how if you can have a good finish, like we had that lull in the middle of the season, you forget about that lull. You remember them last few good days.
And absolutely.
You got a short-term memory when it comes to them bad days, for sure.
Same thing people say about golf, but I don't ever have a good day.
So. See, my front nine's always better than my back nine. So
I don't care. I'm ready to go after two or three, so it don't matter.
I hear you. I'll get so frustrated, I'm just.
Yeah, we could be doing 1,000 other things.
Yeah. Yeah, we could be fishing or anything.
We could be doing anything but fishing.
Anything but hitting the inch and a half ball around.
I like knocking that ball around.
Y'all got to quit hating on fishing, man.
No,
Russ is the main fisherman. Oh, well, Taylor fishes.
Well,
Taylor went fishing last night.
That's why I was late for the first podcast.
I will not go fishing. If you tell me we're going to go catching, I might go. But if you say we're going fishing, I'm out.
I went chasing white perch with a live scope Monday. And
they tore them up.
Yeah. I don't know how many we caught, but we kept probably 60 or 70, but they Monday, okay. We went, me and Brandon, he's got a live scope. He's he's good with them. I mean, hell, he's been retired. He fishes with it all the time, and he's the real deal. And it's, oh man, I mean, I'm not going white perch fishing. I mean, I'm not a big pole fisherman to start with, but you know, once I've fished with them before, you know, I'm not going to fish without one. Basically, you know, it's just because the way you see the bait fall down, you can find the fish. You know, you sweeping the back and forth, you find the fish. And you drop the bait down there on him. It's like, well, I'm wasting my time just drag, because it's not, you know, it's a lot of fish down there, but it's not as many as you think. Like, and you got to put that bait right there on that fish's head, you know, within 6 inches. And
when he does that, it's over, huh?
Oh yeah, you'll see. I mean, you drop the bait down there. I don't know this, you know, you drop the bait down there on top of the fish because you can see which way they're swimming or which way they're looking, and you drop the bait down there on top of them. And I always take mine and almost touch them on the head with it, pick it up a little bit, and you see them. You see them nose up like that, just hold on. It's gonna happen. Yeah, it's
that's cheating.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I like I say, I'm not a huge fisher and don't keep up with that world a whole lot, but it's changed the game, and I kind of think there'll be some changes made on some lakes, you know, kind of not necessarily outlawing them, but maybe, you know, and they may ban them on some lakes.
They need to drop some
or reduce the limits.
Limits too.
Yeah,
anyway.
Reduce the limits. Yeah, so I don't know
some
what they're
going. Some of our good lakes around here, it's kind of crazy compared. You go to Mississippi and some of those. Yeah. It's a lot more reasonable limit.
Yeah,
I ain't a fisherman. It doesn't matter to me. But
actually, I don't fish enough. For
I like
matter.
To eat fish.
I do too.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about something else we all got in common. Kyle, yeah. Lead into this.
Yeah, let's take a little break first. I got to change the battery, and then we're gonna talk about turkey hunting.
Crow hunting.
Crow hunting too. Call me a crow, Eddie. Wicked
Blend from Browning, the ultimate in waterfowl ammunition, featuring the Wicked Wad system, aerodynamically stabilized for greater downrange energy and extra knockdown power. Loaded with precision bismuth and plated steel shot that delivers high energy retention with consistent tight patterns for cleaner kills and easy retrieves. Wicked Blend from Browning, the best there is.
Welcome back to the Simmons Sporting Goods All Things Hunting Podcast. We got caught up on the end of our duck season, and now we're going to transition our minds. We've already done it, though. You know, we talk about the NWTF show is kind of when everybody makes that switch in their heads and gets off of deer and duck hunting and goes to turkey hunting. And it's right around the corner, and we've seen something down there, Josh, that I'll let you introduce. You know, Josh is territory manager for Bandit. And Rusty's wearing the Bandit stuff now, too. He probably going to try to get his hands on that down there for this upcoming turkey season.
So we're known in the waterfowl world, obviously, to most people. What a lot of people don't know is we do have a small line of turkey that gear, if it's a vest, pants. We came out with a leaf jacket this year. For the folks that are on our team and want to keep wearing the B, you know, there hadn't been an option up until the last couple of years, but it's not really known that we do have turkey hunting clothes. and some of the pieces that we have are unique. You know, you see a lot of fishing hoodies with built-in face masks. Well, we took our fishing hoodie with a built-in face mask and put it in your traditional camo patterns, whether it's real tree timber, mossy oak bottomland, whatever it may be. And so for me, I don't have to keep up with the face mask anymore because I can't keep up with the face mask, and I ain't going to keep up with the headlamp. And I'm never gonna carry a knife.
I used to carry 3 face masks
every time we went turkey hunting.
In my vest every time, and when we get back to the truck, it's like taking my kid hunting. Like, give me a face mask, and next time we come hunting, you'll have a face mask.
I always lose my right glove because that's the one I text with. I take it off.
I cut the thumb out of it.
I cut the thumb out. I cut the finger. Fingers out of every glove I have.
And we do make a fingerless glove too. So if anybody's
there, you go. I end up with about 14 left-handed gloves by the end of the season.
Well, if you flip it upside down, it'd be a right-handed glove.
I wear it upside down, and it don't bend the right way. It's all
gets in between your fingers.
So now we do have a selection of turkey clothes. If somebody's looking to purchase some new turkey gear or a turkey vest, and new for 22, like I said, is a leafy jacket, and the leafy camo is coming back right now.
What I noticed about the leafy is, you know, back in the day it was like big leaves on stuff. Mm-hmm. This wasn't as bulky.
I mean, it'd catch every barbed wire fence you went across.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't go across no barbed wire fence.
This fit, I put it on yesterday. And I saw it yesterday. Yeah. I actually took a picture and sent it to a couple other guys that we worked with.
And I think that's one thing with, like, with bandage turkey gear. I mean, that y'all aren't definitely – you aren't the, you know, the leading turkey gear, but y'all have the pieces that are necessary to have. You know, y'all don't just have –
And they're high-quality pieces. They're not cheap, you know.
They fit good. Yeah. You know, they serve a good purpose.
Yeah, somebody leafy stuff, you can grab it and do that and pull it, and it pulls – the whole leaf comes off.
Yeah.
The garment.
And kind of what we see is in the turkey world is a guy that's a diehard turkey hunter, he's wearing the same cotton pant, same cotton shirt that they've wore since they were 10 years old, and they've been wearing it for 35 years, and it's almost white. And most turkey hunters, I guess your average turkey hunter that doesn't travel and do the things we do, they're probably only hunting 7 to 10 days a year, turkey hunting period. So they can't justify going and buying a $150 leaf jacket to go hunt 7 to 10 times. But the guy who is chasing them, he's going to have up-to-date gear, high-quality gear, right, and stuff that is performance-based now, rather than just your straight-up simple vest or simple pants, simple shirt. Because the truth is, there's not many cotton button-ups and cotton pants left on the market. It's just no one wants that stuff.
But with the guy getting started, if he bought that quality, he probably wouldn't have to buy one for a whole long time.
And it's less than $100 for a mock shirt. Like the shirt I'm wearing right now, this is a fishing shirt, but we do make this in camo. You can wear it for turkey.
What I wear every single day turkey.
It's lightweight. I mean, it's polyester spandex, and it's,
you know,
put it on and rock on.
Nothing's worse, man. You don't like getting hot duck hunting, but I hate being hot turkey hunting with too many clothes on. When we hunt, like, I'm sure we all like to move a little bit when we turkey hunt. We don't like deer hunting turkey. We'll get into that, but man, you want to feel that wind come through, and you don't want to be having nothing
praying for that breeze.
But we'll dive into that way. I know.
Yeah, no. I'm interested in learning more about, you know, I know the way we hunt is not the way everybody hunts, and everybody, you know, especially when it comes to turkey hunting, you know, we can go around a table, and if you were going hunting in the morning, you know, what's your routine? Tell, you know, maybe teach somebody that is trying to learn how, you know, what to do.
It all depends on if you know where you're hunting at. So
yeah.
I know the three of us travel a decent amount, and, you know, I hunted a bunch of days. I hunted more mornings last year in a place I'd never been in my life than I did in places I knew where I was. So my goal is always get to a high point early and listen, and then move from there. And then it just, I mean, it all depends on where you're at. I always try to be on the same, if, you know, you're hunting in the hills or somewhere else, I try to be on the same level or above that turkey. If I can, never set up below one.
You're going to learn the hard way.
You're going to learn the hard way. And I have learned the hard way. Yeah. Anymore, I try to never, I have set up below a bunch of them. But anymore, I try to set up on at least the same level, if not above that turkey. And man, so I make duck calls. I make turkey calls. I like to call. And it's probably to my demise more so than it is.
You like to hear him talk to you.
I do, man. I like
to
make them
hear himself talk. Yeah.
Boy, that sounds good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like, man, if I was a turkey, I'd come into that.
Yeah, ideally, I'd like to roast them the evening before and shoot them when they fly down.
Man, that'd be the ticket. I've had very little.
If we hear
success.
One goblin in the evening, we're going to try to kill
him. Yeah, we're going
to go. He's fair game until he jumps up.
We're going to go somewhere else. We're going to go somewhere else the next morning.
Because we done ruined that deal. But so over the past couple of years, I still do mess up a bunch, but I have learned lessons more. My grandfather, one of the best turkey hunters I ever run across, he never stopped calling. I'm telling you, I still got videos. He'd go to Yelp, and I'm telling you, Yelp for a minute and a half. And just never get out of it. And that's, I'd hate to know how many turkeys he had killed, or especially how many he called up for me. So I guess that's where I get it from, but I don't know. It's the biggest thing about turkey hunting is don't be scared to put them walking boots on.
That's it.
And get rolling.
Several years ago, I called Devin one night. We was going to turkey hunt the next morning. I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm out here on the edge of this pasture. It's about 10:30 at night." I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm listening to this turkey gobble."
That's a fact.
He gobbled all night.
He still had one fired up. Night. It gobbled all night.
Gobbling at the coyote.
Was you yelping at it?
Huh? No.
He said he was. He said he was.
I promise I wasn't. He was just gobbling. He sat there. It was a full moon. and he was just gobbling and gobbling and gobbling. I killed him the next morning. Well, I thought he was in one tree, and I ended up sitting on the tree he was in. I mean, and he pitched down about 80 yards from me with a whole bunch of hens. Didn't kill him early, but about 2.5 hours later, I got him. And, hey, he was still gobbling then. So he'd gobbled all afternoon, night, all the morning, and halfway up in mid-morning. When we got done with them hens, I was sitting there waiting on him.
You know, I say this about turkey hunting. It goes hand-in-hand with duck and deer, especially deer. I mean, there's a time in turkey hunting. And there's a time early when they're henned up, and they ain't right. It's tough. It's not. It takes a little bit of the fun out.
Go to the Waffle House.
It really does. So, I mean, it's a time. You got to know a little bit about what the birds are doing. It kind of goes hand-in-hand with deer, too, right before the rut or whatever. They're not going to respond to certain calls. Right. And, you know, what I notice when it's early, they'll gobble on the limb when they fly down.
Yeah, you go to the Waffle House.
You're right.
I told him one
maybe
time.
Maybe have a lucky to catch one later on, mid-morning, afternoon, breaking away, but it's tough, man. You got to know. Goes back to knowing when to call, how to call, when to hang it up and come back.
You got to get in front of them, you know, and that goes back to, you know, if you're at a place where you know the lay of the land, you can always get in front of them, you know.
And, you can't call them crawling.
I was just going to say.
I can't crawl, man. Hey.
I'm not a to each his own, but.
You come with me, you will.
To each his own, I mean, if you want to fan them or whatever, that's fine, but we're talking about calling turkeys, and I don't even think you can compare the two.
No, it's different. It's different hunting for sure.
It's a different deal because that bird you're talking about you can't kill with a call, all you got to do is – I shouldn't say all you got to do because it ain't that easy. But a lot of times you show him that strutter or you show him that fan, you can kill him. Used to, you couldn't kill him.
You got a chance now.
You got a chance.
We've taken a lot of fair – the.
I'm not against any way you can kill
it. As long as it's legal, nope.
Is the NWTF or somebody social media made a cool post the other day talking about, you know,
giving them a fair chance?
Yeah, giving them a fair chance. And I liked that. That was pretty cool.
I think it went something like, you know, mature gobbler's got to live.
He's lived 600 days.
Escape his death 600 days, you know. So don't, you know, I guess basically what the motive they were getting at is, you know, he's got to escape death for 600 days. Don't go in there and
he's earned a right to be hunted fairly. And I thought that was a cool post, and it was. But
so Dev, let me. So like, you know, this may be informative for whoever, you know. Like, all right, so you got a bird roosted. You going in the next morning. What's your game plan? Like, how far do you want to get from that bird roosted in the tree?
Some people like to get right up against them. I will not, if I can help it. I do not get closer than 100 yards to a turkey. I will
that's,
not do
that's
it.
Me. 80
and
that's
like,
me.
I like to be about 200. That way, he has time to hit the ground, and I'm far enough that if he's doing something different, I can do something different. But if he's wanting to come, because they'll pitch. Sometimes they'll pitch and go a long way.
So I was going to say, I have.
If he's roosted with hens or not.
Yeah.
That's right. You know, I kind of like that 80 to 100-yard range. That way, when I see him pitch down, I can see if he's with hens or not, you know.
Very rarely do I set up where we hunt at. Hunt a lot of hardwood bottoms. I set up where I can see the turkey on a limb. Very rarely, hardly ever. Because I feel like at that point, I'm at a disadvantage because I can't do anything. You know, because he's got me pinned down. I don't have him pinned down. He's got me pinned down.
I mean, if he does what he's supposed to do and pitches down, let's just say 30, 40 yards, that's what we want. But, I mean, how many times have you been 100 yards and you watch him fly over the top of you and go to another ridge? Now you're behind, you know.
He's got a heck of a spot. Josh got a heck of a spot to hunt around here close. And one of the very first times we ever hunted there, I'm talking about we were in one's hip pocket early. And it was just the terrain was to the point we could get there. And he flew down, had hens, everything else. And I told him, I said, we're spinning our wheel. I said, let's go to the Waffle House. I said, we'll come back in about 2 hours. And it's about 8 o'clock. We quit. I said, we'll come back, go to the Waffle House, come back in 2 hours. I said, I promise you we'll kill that turkey. He thought I was crazy. We went to the Waffle House, got back at 10:15. At 10:30, there was two of them flopping.
Wow.
When it comes like setting up on a roost, I try to just be where I think the turkey's going to hit the ground.
Yeah.
You know, depending on if there's a big
or which way they're
going
to go. More so than where they hit the ground, I want to be which way. So if I know a turkey's going to land and kind of ease off to the northeast or wherever, I try to set up on that side of him. I mean, you don't want to fight an uphill battle from the start, but a lot of times you don't know. If you're hunting public land, you don't know what that turkey's going to do because you've never – I mean, at my house, the place I hunt, you know, I've killed enough turkeys on one spot that wherever he's roosted, I kind of know where he's going. But you get to hunting public land turkeys, you really don't know what they're going to do. and they have a really cool advantage, and you just kind of got to play ball from there.
Or who else is on down there on him?
Yeah, you
on
don't
the other side of
you don't know what he heard the morning before.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. He may have not have won the roof right there. Somebody like Josh blowed him off the roof. And he went and flew, you know, 250 yards and found another.
We've been on that deal. Calling one's goblin, boom!
Oh yeah,
somebody yeah. You, stroked
or you feel like you called him up for somebody else, and yeah. You don't even know. You know they'll cut you off, but
that's life.
You
My
know that
in
that,
Arcadia, they shoot them. We hear them goblin, and they get shot on right on the line.
Oh yeah, and you sitting here watching two or three in a tree, and you know they ain't flew down. They ain't about to fly down. And next thing you know, boom! You know you can hear the thud like a big cat, like a big fox squirrel coming out of the tree. You know. So.
Come by Simmons Sporting Goods and check out the new models of the X-Bolt rifle from Browning. The best there is. Now back to the Simmons Sporting Goods All Things Hunting Podcast.
And, you know, that kind of goes back, like, I don't have a turkey lease, like, that I hunt, you know, religiously, you know, kind of like Devin. He's got a place, like, where I live is a lot more, you know, low areas, and we don't have the pine ridge and stuff like, you know, so I travel out of state, and Louisiana is not, you know, a hot spot for killing turkeys, you know, and, you know, I only get X number of days to hunt. So when I do go hunting, I try to, you know, make the best of the situation and go to Texas, Mississippi, Missouri, you know, places like that. And so, you know, and like the place we go out in Texas, we've been going out there, you know, several years. And so I know the lay of the land out there. I kind of know or think I know what the birds are going to be doing, but, you know, they can always mess you up. And then, you know, going and hunting, you know, different places. And I don't know, I don't think we'll ever do the World Slam. I mean, the Super Slam, you know, kill one in all 49, but, you know, I'd like to at least knock out as many as I can. So, the Texas place we go out there is me and a couple of buddies. We've been from high school. We've been going out there for years. So that's about the only place we go, you know, every year, you know, but other than that, I kind of like to go, you know, see new places, see new states, you know, and try to kill them like that. And so, you know, sometimes you get lucky and you kill one, you know, the second day, first day, second day. Sometimes it takes 4 days. I mean, I'm in 2020, I did my single season Grand Slam, and the fourth and final bird to kill was my Merriam's in South Dakota. And I got off a plane at 3:45 one evening, and by dark, I didn't kill my bird.
Everybody always thinks you go to Texas. Rios are easy. I will say at times they can be a little.
The Rios we hunt are absolutely not your typical Texas easy.
They're,
you know,
they can be aggravating.
Run into your lap, you know.
I know we hunt a lot in Texas. I know you do. And we hunt in Oklahoma too, and we fight the same battles.
It's a lot of sitting there.
But they're bunched up more too. We fight
yeah.
a big
kind of got
group
deer
hunt. Yeah. And I don't know, like, that lease out in Texas, it's about 1,200 acres, which say it's not huge, you know, and we got one pod and then the three friend group that goes, and he's kind of like Dev, I guess. They remind me a lot of each other. He likes to do a lot of walking. And the first morning or the first evening, sometimes we leave in the morning, get there, you know, after lunch, and we'll kind of go, and we try to all just get – we all got kind of favorite little spots on that lease, and I'll get on, like, the offset, and I'll sit on a creek, and I won't move all evening. I watch what's coming across high lines, following the creeks, and see where everything roosts, you know, and then – next morning you better kill one, you know. It's a lot of action that next morning, but, you know, all three of us get up and we start, you know, kind of roaming around exploring new stuff. And I don't know if it's just so wide open out there, those birds are seeing you before you see them, but that first morning is going to be the, you know, the most action, you know.
Gonna see
so.
John at least three
you
times.
Gonna see John, yeah, my boy John. He he needs to start carrying around some water. It's gonna be like my wife, my personal caddy, my water boy. He's gonna walk by me at least twice a day. You know.
Got a quick. What's y'all's take on killing a turkey with a bow?
Man,
I've got no desire.
See, me and Kyle kill one apiece.
I've done it. Did it out of a blind, and absolutely, just okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I killed one Kansas deer hunting out of a blind. You know, had a wad of turkeys come up and shot one, and I go over and chase him down and wring his neck and everything.
And I like
I'm
to hunt.
Anybody who does it, man.
I like to hunt. No decoy. Gun.
I want
call. I'm talking about just trick them.
I want all the way. Yeah, I
like to kill them. I don't, you know, that's like, you know, Devin and Josh, they shoot 20 gauge during duck season. I'm shooting 12, you know.
You want to kill him deader than they do.
Exactly.
I shoot 3.5 for turkey.
What about a 410? Yeah. You going to get on a 410 kick?
410.
No. For rather than hunting turkey on.
man.
That 410 is potent.
Boy or girl one day.
You ain't lying. That 410 is.
That's why I got one.
Rusty will shoot a 410.
I like a 410. I got one. I've smoked some turkeys.
I only shoot a 20 gauge turkey hunting anymore.
You know,
but I mean, I grew up in a place that it used to be one of the finest places to hunt turkeys in the state of Louisiana.
But now y'all ain't shooting a stock 20 gauge either. With this ammo and chokes and tricked out guns, I mean,
I agree with that.
If you know what a stock 20 can do, or a modified 20, just know what a modified 12 can do.
Right.
You know? And so that's kind of my thing, you know, like going state to state, chasing these birds, stuff like that. I would hate myself if, you know, if I had, and of course, it's like doing ducks, you know, we like to see them, you know, get in there and get right and get tight. But, you know, if I'm going to a new state, like, you know, if we go to Kentucky this year.
What you say, he will reach out there and try.
If I get a bird, he's out there at 60, you know, that's kind of borderline for a 20 gauge, you know, and it's the last day. And if I got a 20 gauge and I don't feel like comfortable killing him, but I know I could have killed him with a 12 gauge, that, you know, the whole ride home, I'd be thinking, well, hey, if I had a 12 gauge, I could go ahead and, you know,
that's a long way to go.
By Kentucky, you know, and mark that state off, you know, versus if you had a 20 gauge, well, you know, we got to spend hundreds or $1,000 airfare and travel time.
Shoot,
and
gas.
And lodging, gas, yeah.
Man, gas right now.
And kids, talking about kids, or mentioned kids for shooting a 410, but that right there adds a whole nother aspect to this being gone. I mean, you're saying you're not married,
yeah,
no kids. You can roll. Me and Devin, like, if I get 2 days, I got to make it count. I can't. So I understand exactly what you're saying. I'm not going to miss anything. My oldest one's a junior, and they got a really good little softball team. And I looked on the calendar. They got 18 days of school this month, and there's 13 ball games. So, but that window's drawing to an end. So my turkey days are slim these days, but you definitely got to make them count.
Yeah, I may just be greedy, man. I like to kill.
No.
I
don't, you don't go out there to watch them. You watch them on TV.
You know, if I want to watch a sunset, you know, I can type in on Google and probably see the prettier sunsets you've seen, you know, or anything. When I get up hour before daylight and I've drove hundreds of miles to go hunting, I'm getting up to go kill.
That's right.
Bottom line. And people, you call me greedy, you know.
No.
I guess I hadn't reached that.
Mike said it best.
I hadn't reached that, you know. We're
out here to kill.
You ever killed, you know, you ever kill enough or anything like that? No,
I've killed a bunch, and I haven't killed enough.
No, I don't know if I'll ever kill enough. You know, the day I kill enough, I don't know. That time, it's a ways out.
They're probably going to be throwing dirt in your face.
Yeah, it's a ways out. So.
Well, they're fixing to give away the awards down here. We're going to cut this one off real quick, but last thing, people listening, if you had to take one call in the woods, whether it be box, slate, diaphragm, push button, what would you take?
I love a pot call, but if I'm taking one call in the woods, I'm taking a diaphragm. Most versatile call. I call a turkey when he's close. I call him when he's far.
What cut do you blow?
Hmm?
What cut do you usually blow?
I like a combo cut.
What's that? What's the combo cut? Is it?
It's
like
kind of got the U
V?
With a V and a one off the side.
Yeah.
But aggressive. It's a loud, aggressive cut and call. You know, made. It's what I like to roll. I like to cut at them sunguns.
I'm the same way. Diaphragm between everything you can do on one. Plus, I mean, you can put it in your shirt pocket. You can put that in your mouth and just grab your gun and roll. I can do about everything on it. That's a no brainer for me.
Yep, diaphragm for me. You know. It's I don't know. Slate call would probably be a close second, but you know, when the birds are, you know, you're hung up, pinched in, Texas, everything's wide open. You know, it's hard to scratch a slate call and then, you know, get back on your gun, everything else, that mouth call. If you learn how to utilize it and figure that thing out and play with it when you're in your truck, you know, you can do anything you want to do and kill plenty of turkeys that way. So diaphragm for me.
Right. What about you, Josh?
I'm taking the call from my wife when she calls me when I'm in the woods.
I hear you.
And I'm gonna get to stay a couple extra days. They gonna have to go home.
Hey, not old G. They ain't got no wife. He ain't going home.
No, I use a slate call and a mouth call. I mean, I don't prefer one over the other.
Right. I use a slate call.
I ain't very good at either one of them. But
same way. I mean, I can mouth call, but I can yelp good, and I can cut, but I can't do all the – I can't purr good and all that other stuff. And so I'll use a slate call, and I'll purr a lot on a slate call.
Yeah, and if I'm trying to strike a turkey, you know, of course, you know, we're just talking. You ain't got to have just one call. I mean, the options are endless. You can have one every kind you want. You have anything from a wing bone, box call, slate call,
when a turkey's on – I tell you, when I go turkey hunting, I probably have 8 to 9 calls on me.
I ain't taking a box call.
Like if one's on the roost early, I like a pot call. I like to purr, cluck, real soft yelps.
Yeah.
A windy day, I like a box call. If I'm hunting somewhere where a bunch of people been, or if I'm trying to strike one, I use a tube call. If I'm hunting some place a bunch of people been, I break out old wing bone. You know, I'm telling you, I got it all, know how to use it all. Yeah. I will use it all.
You got to throw the kitchen sink in.
I will.
Well, fellas, I thank y'all very much for being on this podcast. I hope everybody has a good turkey season.
Best of luck to y'all.
Thank you for having me.
What is it that distinguishes the best? A wanting to defy reason, disrupt industry, and captivate the imagination. To be better, you should look further. Dream bigger. Aspire by Bandit. Superior.